This is Brock and Salk
from the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle app.
All right, this hour, Brock and Salk, brought to you by Precor Home Fitness. Phone lines will be open as we go through a bunch of different topics, 206-421-3776. I see some people already hanging on. So if you want to jump in, be a part of our morning, please do. We'd love to hear from you guys on another cloudy, calm before the storm. It's about to get hot.
Yeah, this is what we call marine layer.
Oh, yep. Burn off, go away, and let's get hot again. It's going to be 90 here in the next couple of days. I can't wait. All right, a couple of people who seem to be tone deaf. And the first, one of them I don't think anyone will have much of a disagreement with. The other, I think there's going to be a lot of disagreement. And let's start with Roger Goodell, because it's almost unfathomable to me that we are still dealing with this anthem thing. It has been 2 years since Colin Kaepernick first kneeled. 2 years. It has been, say that out loud. Yeah. It has been 2 years since Colin Kaepernick first took a knee, and Roger Goodell still hasn't figured out a way to solve this thing yet. Darren Rovell was saying yesterday that if he can't get this solved, he can't be the commissioner of the NFL. Mm-hmm. I already think he's forfeited that right in five different ways or whatever. But I have to agree. How hard is it to figure out a way to deal with this issue and get it out of the headlines 2 years later?
How hard is it? Really hard.
Apparently it's impossible.
Why? Because it's not Roger Goodell. Roger Goodell is the mouthpiece for 32 guys. And have we talked about those 32?
It is Roger Goodell's job to find a way to get them in line,
he manages,
get them into the same position.
32 billionaires. That's what he does. He manages 32 billionaires, many of whom have very different agendas, many of whom come from a different era, many of whom love to roll him out there and let him take all of these arrows, and many of whom, Mike, are obviously wishy-washy. And as Clayton just said 45 minutes ago, unwilling to concede when they were wrong. I mean, this was wrong. This is just not the way you go about a partnership or go about the business, wherever you stand on the issue. To have this be front and center in your headline still 2+ years with all of the negativity it creates. It creates negativity.
On all sides.
Which your brand
on
just
all
does
sides.
Not
so whatever, whatever side you think you're on this entire debate, try to understand that there's about half the people that are on your side and another half the people, give or take, that are on the other side. And that is not good for the NFL. And I think Roger is uniquely unqualified to deal with this issue for a few different reasons. One, he's got a couple of blind spots. One of those blind spots seems to be actually having meaningful dialogue with his partnership with the players. It is a blind spot for Roger Goodell and always has been. He consistently forgets that he's in a collectively bargained situation. He consistently wants all of the power concentrated in his office. There have been times where that has worked out well, and there have been times where that is a gigantic problem for the league. This is one of the latter. This is a major problem for the league. This is not a situation where you can simply dictate terms to the players. It is not going to work, and all he does every time he tries to dictate terms is throw gasoline on the fire. He makes this issue bigger and worse every single time. That's part one. Part two of this is that Roger has always played by the any publicity is good publicity playbook. And it's worked out really, really well in a lot of different situations. Spygate, Deflategate, yep. What was the one with the Saints, Bountygate.
Oh, yeah.
All of those things were great for NFL ratings. Mm-hmm. Fighting with the referees, fighting with the union the last time. All of those things, all they did was end up adding to a rising ratings tide.
Yes.
All of the controversy, all of the drama, all of it added to the ratings. He finally found something that does not. And yeah. I'm not saying that it destroys the ratings. I'm not one of those people who thinks that ratings are down by 30% or something because I don't think that. But it's not helping. This is not bringing eyeballs to the NFL, and Roger doesn't have another play to execute. He has been running into the line of scrimmage over and over and over on this one, and like Darrell Bevell, hasn't come up with another plan. There is no other plan. This is all Roger knows how to do.
Players
is
are
to
torn.
Run this playbook over
players
and over again.
Players are torn on this issue. Players within their own locker room are severely torn on this issue. Owners are torn on this issue. This brings up politics. This brings up patriotism. This should be a, I will not play. Let's pass. let's just pass go, and this is not going to benefit the players. It's not going to benefit the owners. It's not going to benefit our brand. So we will stay in like we did until the last 10 years. And some of, you know, what we did patriotically, and some of the funds and everything else.
It is too late for that, man. It is too late for that.
Stay in the locker room?
The players who want to protest are going to be just as mad about that. It's too late. You've let that toothpaste out of the tube, man. And by the way, it was your own idea that allowed for this to happen.
Ample other opportunities to project their message.
You can tell them that that's the case all you want. That doesn't mean that's the way they're going to hear it, man.
All right.
You may be right that might be the solution you'd like. Let's see what happens when you try that, especially if you try it unilaterally. If you want to sit down and meet with the players' union and have that conversation and see if you can get everybody to buy in and come to the table and agree that that's in the best interest of everyone, yep. By all means, try that.
Yeah, try to
but if you
that
want to try that unilaterally, yep. You're toast. Yep. You are toast. There's no chance that will work. None.
Try to do that. Try to get a group in a room. There were ideas, Mike, that have come up in the past. You're like, oh, that kind of celebrate this. Yeah, both sides got to give and take a little bit. And what happens? What happens through some of that collaboration? Just more headaches, you know, more distaste, more disgruntled people. So it's, yeah, not the seat you want to sit in. Very difficult. It's why he gets paid $50 million because he gets to manage 32 billionaires. And unfortunately, the way they've handled this over the last 2 years, left the door open for this kind of criticism.
Just failed and failed.
Stay in the locker room. Close the door and stay in the locker room.
You can't just tell them to do that.
Yep.
You think if you were in charge, that's what you would do?
I would hope, yes, I would. And I would hope I could sit the players' union and some of their most powerful reps in that room and say, this does not do good for any of us. This is a net loss for all of us on both sides of this issue. In the resolution right now is in a position of leadership that I am, is I have to make this call. I have to look out for the best interest of this. And ultimately, I've been empowered through these CBAs to be able to make these calls with punishment, with discipline, with the guidance of the league. I think this is net the best case scenario.
Okay, and now I'm going to play the role of DeMora Smith. You try to tell us that's what you want to do, we'll sue.
Well, we'll see you in court then, which was
now
where we
now your
been.
Issue gets to continue. Yep. You've already failed. Your issue's going to go another year while the court figures it out.
I would say to DeMoris what I've said all along through all of these protests. What is your message and what are you doing? Why is it this vehicle and this outlet here? Because your players
doesn't
are torn
matter.
On this.
Your doesn't matter. You don't get to decide that.
Okay.
You're just the commissioner
okay,
of the NFL.
Okay, then you're going to play that game. You're
I mean,
play
but that's what DeMoris is allowed to do, and that's what he's doing. And that's why the idea of telling the union what to do doesn't work.
Just like the union telling the big boss what to do doesn't work. Oh, go ahead and do that. Go ahead and we'll see how that. It just doesn't work and it's unhealthy.
Great.
And unfortunately,
and,
that's
and
the
who's the person who's in charge of this whole thing?
Yep.
Roger Goodell. You're the one at the top. You've got to find a way to humble yourself, which I know doesn't exactly come natural to him. He's got to find a way to humble himself and actually ask instead of tell. That is what this all comes down to for me with Roger Goodell. If Roger were to open up his ears instead of his mouth, if he were to ask DeMora Smith and the Players Union what they want and how they make this go away, instead of just trying to tell them over and over again like he does with everything, he might have actually come up with some solutions here,
but
he doesn't.
And if I were still a player in this league, and I want to get to some other issues here, but if I were still a player in this league, Mike, I would say to you what I would say to DeMora, this is on you as well, it takes two. You have such a sour relationship that unfortunately, and there are old guys that hate Gene Upshaw, that hated him, many of them.
Because he caved on everything.
But you know what? He fostered a relationship that got things done, saw a salary cap grow, something they were able to actually get decisions made between the two, something that DeMaurice has not. He bargained a horrible deal that has angered many of these players.
Yeah, but they traded
they don't
on
have
things
the
relationships. The players got what they wanted. And they didn't get everything they wanted, but when it came down to it, the players decided they'd rather have an easier life than more money and power. And now they're regretting that choice.
That's what they thought they
wanted. That's what they wanted.
That's what they wanted at the time. They said, hey, we want the easier life. Give us fewer practices and smaller training camps and less
hitting
and this and that.
Yep.
And that's where the ownership eventually caved.
Yep.
And it turns out what a lot of those players really wanted was more power.
Yep.
And unfortunately, they didn't bargain for that. And it was imperative for Roger that he have everything centralized in his office. Because as always, everything's got
to
run
to business,
through Roger.
Mike. Welcome to big labor. Welcome to business. Welcome
there
to the way
there are plenty of businesses that don't operate where everything runs through a dictate from the CEO.
Yep.
And there are very few businesses like the NFL where the product is the labor. And that is unique to sports. There aren't other businesses
like
that.
And I hope we're still doing this in 4 years because I can't wait to see how they are going to, from the players' perspective, rally together, Mike. And that's going to be their biggest challenge. And Graz says it all the time, and he's right. How can these players here, these players whose careers last 3.5 years on average still, whose net worth starts with an M and not a B, how those guys, can they all get on the same page? Yeah. Can they actually do that in a way and empower as a group to really negotiate away some of that power? I don't know. It hasn't happened. And we'll be very curious in 4 years if they can make that.
All right, well, we'll open up the lines on this and a few other topics as well as we burn through these. 206-421-3776. 206-421-3776. A lot of passion on the text, as usual. I think that's where you see it. Yeah. But if you actually want to put your voice to this, you can use the phones as well. 206-421-3776. And I know there are those who are saying, hey, stop talking politics. This isn't about politics. This is about how Roger Goodell chooses to handle the business of the NFL. Yeah. This is not a political conversation. This is an NFL conversation because for 2 years, this has been allowed to be an issue. And that ultimately has to fall on somebody.
Yep.
I think that's Roger Goodell. This is one of his blind spots. All right, 206-421-3776. What in the world is wrong with Larry Fedora?
I like Larry Fedora.
Okay. Do you like what happened yesterday?
That was a little goofy.
What is he doing?
Actually, Larry Fedora and Ed Orgeron have something in common. Every time I see him, they say the same. They don't say the same thing. Ed always says sack fumble to me. And Fedora brings up the Oahu Bowl every time, where he was the D coordinator for Air Force, right, of course, when they beat me.
So those of you who
sack fumble.
Yeah, thank you, Ed.
Thanks, Ed. Take the worms out of your mouth. For those of you who don't know who Larry Fedora is, he is the head coach at North Carolina.
Had a lot of success at Southern Miss. Was a D coordinator forever. He is old school. He's about 5'9", rocked up, Southern tough.
Well, and yesterday he tried to show just how tough he is, talking about what would happen if football really did decline and go away in America one day because of head injuries.
There will be decline of our country, there's no doubt. Yeah, I there's no doubt in my mind. I think because of the lessons that you learn in the game of football relay to everything that's going to happen in the rest of your life. And if we stop learning those lessons, we're going to struggle. And, you know, I think in some ways we're struggling more now than we ever have. Are we ever going to be a perfect country? No, not by any means. But I do think the game of football has had a major impact on who we are as a country.
Mike, there's a sliding scale of things.
I'm sorry. I missed like the first 20 seconds of that cut, laughing at the first 3 seconds.
There are roughly,
what did he even say?
There are roughly 2 million people in the country that play football. Roughly 2 million. I mean, in a 2012 study, the NCAA estimated there are 1.1 million high school football players and nearly 70,000 college football players in the United States. So, I mean, over time, that's just 1.2 million people. I mean, how many people play football? What percentage of the people in this country play football?
Do they play football or are they entertained by football?
Well, that's not what he's saying. The lessons learned by football. Mm. He's not talking about watching. And if he wanted to make the argument that our way of life in various places where tailgating and rooting for the local team is life, like, okay, at
where
least
50 million watch a Super
at
Bowl.
At least make that point. But like, all right, if the Super Bowl goes away, the country's going to be in decline?
Mike, it will melt.
What are you talking about? And that's not the argument he's making anyway. His argument is that because we learn these life lessons by playing football, if those went away, we wouldn't know what to do as a country.
The country would fall apart.
1 million people out of how many people live in the United States?
Mike, we'd become Canada. Okay? It would just dissipate. The whole country would just erode.
What is he talking about?
There will be decline of our country. There's no doubt in my mind. I think because the lessons that you learn in the game of football relay to everything that's going to happen in the rest of your life.
Right. So if you don't play football as a kid, I don't know how you're going to make it through the rest of your life.
How did we have America before there was football?
It's really hard to imagine.
How did the founding fathers get through
this?
Well,
they played it.
Yeah, at Plymouth Rock.
That's why George Washington had wood teeth that got knocked out playing football.
That's it. Like, there was the cherry tree, and then there was the football.
There was a football.
Okay. What percentage of women grow up playing football? Under 1%?
I don't know, but Charlotte and Lexi at my camp were straight ballers.
Right, I'm not saying it's zero. I didn't say it's zero, but
ballers.
Do you think it's under 1% of girls grow up playing football?
Probably.
Rough estimate. Yes. Let's even say it's 1%.
Yes.
How did the other 99% of women grow up? Like, are they not able to learn any of these lessons without football?
I think he would say to you, Mike.
And are these lessons not able to be learned through other sports, only through football?
Well, football, you got that Harbaugh. I mean, this is, like I said, sliding scale. Fedora stepped on the accelerator, but it was Harbaugh like a year ago that said this.
It's not a fun sport. But what you come to love is the struggle of it. I love football. Love it. Love it. I think it's the last bastion of hope for toughness in America, in men, in males.
Okay.
I mean, in males.
At least he makes that yes. important point yes. because that is a relevant point. Like at least he's taking the part of the population that actually plays the game.
So good.
And Alito damn ice cream.
Okay.
There will be decline of our country.
The decline of our country because of CTE. Now, they had a good run with democracy starting in 1776. Who would have thought CTE and the decline of football ever would have brought them down?
It would be the demise of my work. Since, you know, I've been a kid and my dad coached and I played collegially and professionally and talked about it
what
the last
would you
20
do?
Years.
Yeah. You'd probably starve.
Probably.
And that would, of course, start a chain reaction that would lead to the end of the United probably States of America.
It's probably a reach to say that America would be lost.
You think?
If football were gone.
You think
yeah,
it's probably a
it's
reach?
It's probably a leap that I would not be willing to take. Mm. But I'll tell you what, it's based out of just one thing and one thing alone, and that is fear. That is fear that this sport is going to go away.
You should be afraid.
Yes, and there's
this
great
sport
fear.
Is in very real danger.
I told you last year, if you played Tommy Tuberville, if you played him at our college football seminar last year in Connecticut, where we all gathered together, and by the way, Tommy lasted 1 year in the booth. He's out. He's done. He'd had enough of this nonsense. So hopefully he can go and crank up some of the youth numbers. He got up at the end of the seminar, kind of awkwardly, to be honest, but he got up on stage at the end of it and said, listen, guys, we've had a great 2 days talking all this football. But we have a crisis on our hands, that the youth numbers are hitting a rate of tremendous concern. And that is really at the root of what Fedora is saying. Mm-hmm.
He's right.
Yes.
There's a major, major concern major about issue. The future of football. But this actually makes it worse, not better. He sounds like he's had too many head injuries.
Yes.
Honestly. I mean, like, he's proving the other side's point. I don't know, man.
Tone deaf?
Who's more tone deaf, Roger Goodell or Larry Fedora?
But the problem, and you know how this goes, Mike, in this climate that we're in right now, and people said, stop talking politics, because everything gets somewhat politicized, right? There's just got to be a side, and he's an idiot, and he's a stumbling, bumbling fool, and he's all of these things, and you're going to take it. But from his perspective, and a lot of those old guard football guys are going to say, I'm just tired of this narrative that's got passed along as
I'm
fact.
Sure they are.
I'm tired of this CTE causes head injuries, and football is the major root of it. I'm tired of that being a fact. It's just say, oh, science and fact, and here's 199 brains. Well, do you know all the other control factors on those brains?
No one
does. I don't want to know. I just want the headline. Give me the headline. And we live in a headline society, so he's tried to make a headline. Unfortunately, it was a rather silly one.
Well, Brock, those guys can get upset about facts and figures, but, I mean, at some point, the evidence is going to become overwhelming. It is already teetering
okay,
on that point.
But the other challenge is for all of those that have played it their whole life and never had it. Then what? Then
you,
what is it? What
like
is that
you understand
evidence?
How percentages work, right?
Yeah, Mike, don't get all funny and academic
not,
and science
like,
and philosophy.
It's possible for one person to have an experience sure. and another person to have a different one.
Absolutely. And it absolutely is. And I would love to know the control factors on every one of those brains studied. I was sitting at a table with one of my college football people I respect a ton. And we're talking about this, actually, with a guy named Sam Acho, who you're going to see a ton and you are going to love as an analyst. Former Texas player, pro player, unbelievably bright, just vibrant guy. And we were chatting about it because he's real passionate about it. And I love talking. And this other colleague was like, you know, I had never thought about that. There's other control factors like massive steroid abuse in those eras.
Absolutely.
I had never thought about that. And it's like, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of factors. But when we live in a headline society and you make a silly headline like Larry Fedora right there, like America's demise is coming with the loss of football, you lose any credibility. So not the right way to go about it. But, you know, unfortunately, we don't have a lot of great conversations.
But just because you feel backed into the corner and you don't like the facts that are coming out doesn't mean you get to spout off like an imbecile, which
That's
is what
true
he
too.
Did. 206-421-3776. Mike is in Oak Harbor. Mike, go ahead.
Kind of curious of something, you know, Goodell gets, you know, cooked all the time. And, you know, you take a multi-billion-dollar corporation who had a board of directors, and you got a CEO, that board of directors tells him what to do and what direction to go. So why is everybody always on Goodell's case when he's, you know, he's got to go with the guys that sign the paycheck.
Yeah, I don't think those guys tell him what to do on a daily basis. I don't think that's the way it works.
Not on a daily basis, but he knows approximately what they want him to do.
But part of what that job entails is coalition building and keeping those owners trying to get them to bend to his will as the commissioner of the game. You're right. Ultimately, the power will be with the owners. And if too many of them decide they want him out, that'll be the end of Roger Goodell. Mm-hmm. But part of that job is finding ways to influence them and build consensus. Yep. And at times, even going against their wishes, which we've seen. Bob Kraft is as powerful an owner as there is outside of maybe Jerry Jones and one or two others. He's right there in the top three. And he hated Goodell for like 2 years over the entire first Spygate and then Deflategate. So he doesn't just sit there and work for every owner's whim. It's up to him to protect and the integrity of the game and to try to grow the pie for everybody. And if the way he's handled this has been the opposite of that, then that's on him, not on the 32 owners. Sorry, go ahead.
They should have just stayed in the locker room. You know, just gone back, made it simple, not make an issue out of everything. But you got to admit, Goodell's in between two of the biggest egotistical, self-centered groups of people on this planet.
He absolutely is. But guess what? And this is a Jim Moore argument. Mm-hmm. He makes a tremendous amount of money to deal with it. Mm-hmm. And if he can't find a way to bridge a gap between those two egotistical bodies, then find somebody else who can. Yeah. Because that's the job. Unfortunately for him, you can complain about the challenges of it, but that's the gig. Like, if you want to be the commissioner and draw the $50 million paycheck a year, guess what the gig is? Bridge that gap.
Yep.
And if you can't do it, then you're not qualified. Find somebody else.
Yes.
Sorry, man. Yeah. Like, I'm not buying thank you, Mikey. These excuses for Roger Goodell.
Yep. That is the job and the responsibility. Isn't this kind of a fun day, by the way? Kind of fun to get the juices flowing a little bit. I know the text toys probably really mad.
I'm not even
really
looking fired at the text up.
Don't even look at it. It's great. Kind of nice to have some topics to get the juices flowing a little bit. Must be football season.
These are big ones, man. And the future of the game of football and the way Roger Goodell is going to handle it, they're all tied up together. And let's not forget, Brock, that one of the reasons that I think the side that believes the CTE is a big problem, one of the reasons that they are pushing as hard as they are is because the league buried it for so long.
Yep.
And if the league 20 years ago instead of 4 years ago would have come out and said, all right, we got to work on this. You guys got a problem and we got to try to figure out what's going on here. We're going to keep this public instead of trying to hide it.
Yep. But you
this
know
whole thing might be handled entirely differently.
And you know what I always argue on that? Players as well had a part to play in that. And many of them would tell you that they wanted to look the other way. And the teammates that I played with, Mike, that made that conscious decision.
They didn't have the stats on CTE.
I'm not going to say the name. I remember vividly sitting in the weight room with him, and he was like, yeah, I don't know what room I go in sometime. I'm like, why are you playing? He's like, where else am I going to make $2 million? You know, where else am I going to do this? I'm going to sign my new deal, and I'm going to play a couple more years, and I know it. I know this isn't good for me, but this is, you know, the choice that I'm making there, you know, and those kind of tough decisions that I think many guys made for many years that is now obviously catching up to them.
Sure is. And
what do you want to do? You want to talk baseball?
Yeah, I think we're going to have to.
If we told people what's coming at 9, by the way.
No, I don't think you can tell people that. When you drop a bomb on people like that, I think you just have to let it happen all at once. You just got to let them
be surprised.
Roger
Goodell at 9. Roger Goodell
at 9. Like the players were when CTE came out. You just got to surprise them with the CTE that we're bringing to the table at 9 o'clock.
Roger is in at 9.
That's true.
Yep.
In his own weird, unique way. All right. Let's see. We will talk some Mariners coming up next. The second half starts tonight, and they're doing it in a very unique way. It's up next on Brock and Salk.
This is Brock and Salk.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Here are your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Salk.
Fine Young Cannibals, let's go. Brock and Salk, 710 ESPN, Seattle, 710sports.com. We got a Twins band, the Fine Young Cannibals, FYC. Big time Grammy Award winners this year. Brock, the Mariners get back to it tonight.
Thank
God.
I love that voice.
You like radio DJ voice?
I really do.
Do you?
I love Northeast voice. I love radio DJ voice. I think it's some of the most endearing work you do.
I love Boston hockey dad voice.
Lydia totally agrees too. It's one thing that just puts Lydia in giggles when every time you do any of that.
When I was growing up, like fifth, sixth grade, right around there, I had a friend named John Frazora. Great dude.
You did.
And John's dad, Chuck Frazora.
Big guy.
Was, no, not at all. But John's dad, Chuck, was like this huge DJ from the 60s. Like, he'd always fancied himself a DJ from the 60s. He was a contractor. He made some money, and he outfitted his whole basement as basically a radio studio from the 1960s. He had a million different albums.
Goodness.
Like, every album of every song from the 1960s stacked against the walls, and he had a whole microphone and recording system, and every year in the 80s and into the early 90s, he would put out a special edition, like, cassette of 20 years earlier than that. So like in 1988, he made the best of 1968, and he would DJ the whole thing with all of the songs. It was awesome.
Wow.
He would call himself Lucky Chucky. And he would do like, hey, you got the crazy man, Lucky Chucky, coming at you for the next 90 minutes. Here's Steppenwolf in Born to be Wild. And like he'd play the songs and talk over them and hit the post. He was obsessed with being a radio DJ.
And he was cool dad?
I thought so. Yeah. Like I would go over to their house and I thought it was the greatest thing in the world. Like I went to go see the Beach Boys with him. I loved it. I thought he was like the coolest thing in the entire world. Like his son was okay. I was sort of friends with John, but his dad, like, count me in. I loved that guy.
I feel like Ed Orgeron would have been good at that.
What do you say, guys? Great to be on the show.
Lucky Chucky, man. He was awesome. 68, 69, 70. All right. Mariners get back to it tonight. Finally. When's the last time the Mariners played a meaningful game?
I was ready for the break.
When's the last time the Mariners won a game? It's been like a month.
Tuesday night, Dean Segura had a three-run bomb. Eddie Diaz blew the close. So they played Tuesday night.
When's
at least
the last time the Mariners won a game?
That was Marco's game. His 3-0 win down in Anaheim, correct? A week ago, Wednesday.
Sheesh.
So 9 days, I believe.
It's been 9 days since the Mariners have won a game.
Yep.
And it's been essentially almost 3 weeks since they've played good baseball. I really hope they're ready to come out there and attack this thing tonight.
Yeah, because they made the breaks against Anaheim, that series at home. They did take two of three, but there were a couple plays. They were fortunate, fortuitous bounces with one off the plate. But they took that series, and then they were fortunate to get just one win against Colorado at home. They got zero wins against Colorado on the road. And Marco's the only reason they didn't get swept down in Anaheim. Yeah, it was a tough stretch. Losers of 8 of 11 going into the All-Star break. And hopefully over the last four, healthier, feel better, bodies are rested, and juiced up for the White Sox.
You're about, 25 days away from Robinson Cano returning, give or take a couple of days. So just over 3 weeks away from the return of Robinson Cano. Jerry DePoto on with Danny David Moore yesterday for the Jerry DePoto Show. Made it very clear what Robbie's going to be doing when he gets back.
We've sat down, we talked to Robbie, and I've said this actually on this show a number of times. We know that Robbie is ineligible to play second base and fourth in the postseason. Therefore, we have to be creative in how we handle this when he comes back. And we're gonna juggle some balls and between first base, second base, and designated hitter, and not limiting it to that. If we're going to move players around. We envision Robinson playing every day. We're really looking forward to getting his bat back in the lineup.
And that's a have to in the second half of the season. And Graz argued yesterday, and Bob, I think, was right alongside him. There's not going to be a better bat traded for in the next 11 days. You know, this trade deadline, Manny Machado was, you know, as far as some youth, I think some power and where he's at in the prime, very, very prime of his career. Jerry DePoto even said that yesterday, the guys. There's nobody. It's Manny Machado and then a big gap for the next positional player. So the Mariners get the next best positional player. He's going to be versatile, and he's going to have a bat that this lineup desperately needs.
Well, he's going to have to. He's not. I mean, I think anybody who thought Robbie was going to dictate the terms here, that wasn't going to happen. I mean, they were in a position to dictate to Robbie how this was going to go when he comes back.
Not going to happen, but that would have been a delicate conversation if he was eligible for the postseason.
Maybe, but if he was eligible for the postseason, you'd possibly just want him back at second base and do things the way you had it to begin with. I mean, like, the world would be a different place. That's not the case. He's not eligible for the postseason. They do need his help in order to try to get there, and this is clearly the best way to try to do it. When Ryan Healy's had his issues, when D. Gordon's had his issues at the plate, when Guillermo Heredia's had his issues at the plate playing center field, I mean, this gives you the most flexibility to add, to use who's hitting, and to allow to play some matchups for Scott Servais and to get Cano back into that lineup as often as possible. Jerry DePoto, looking at the future here for the trade market, knows it's not just about pitching.
We're certainly looking. We've made a lot of phone calls. We're on the phone, and we're working them. And whether we try to find somebody to help our starting staff or our bullpen, we will try it. We're also not closing the door on the potential of adding the right position player if the opportunity exists there. I guess in short, we want to get better, and we're trying to find any way we can to help this team out without disrupting the mojo they have in the clubhouse.
That's why Leonis Martin's name has come up, I think, a few times in media circles and in blogger circles, because he could do a lot of those things. He's having a good year at the plate. He's a better hitter than Guillermo Heredia, both traditionally, you know, both over his career and for this year. He fits instantly into the clubhouse, having known everybody here and been one of their best clubhouse people to begin with. Leonis Martin's name probably isn't going to go away while he's playing in Detroit in a team that's going nowhere.
John Jay, a guy you're still interested in? Is that another
I'm
name?
I'm not uninterested, but it just seemed like it didn't go right with him when, you know, they tried to get him in the offseason. He just didn't seem to have the interest in coming here. So yeah. I don't think so. Not at this point. I don't know that he's the clubhouse
with
guy.
With your controllable desires, which is a must and a have to, it feels like, with so many of these pitching moves that the Jerry made, at least in the first couple years of building, maybe it's different now. Maybe, you know, J-Hap, who's not young and who's not controllable, really fits a need very specific for the next 2 months. It was very different from the previous 2 years. Mm-hmm. Does young and controllable have to come into play with a positional player or a bat?
Well, I think we know it'll always be at least something they're looking for. Doesn't mean they'll get it every single time. But, yeah, I mean, look, if you were going through potential needs for the Mariners here moving forward, you could probably come up with a whole bunch of them. I mean, do they need a starting pitcher? Yes.
Yes.
Do they need a reliever, a right-hander? Yes. Do they need a lefty specialist? Potentially. Do they need a outfielder? Yeah, possibly. Could they use another catcher? Maybe. Could they use a first baseman if you found one to play every single day at first base? Yeah, I mean, if that was what was available, there's some ways they could move their roster around to allow really for anything.
Which is so amazing. That whole little diatribe right there is reflective of one thing, a -2 run differential. It is like it's a two-side of this thing. That side with all of these needs is the -2 run differential. And on the other side is 19 games over 500, the fourth best record in baseball. And we are going to very much prioritize and not rock the boat with so many guys that believe in what we're doing, with tremendous team chemistry, with a sense of belief in that building that we have not had. And to add 2, 3, 4 pieces, Mike, I think would be, to me, a little bit concerning of the element of the chemistry they've created.
Yeah, I think that ultimately they're reflective of wants more than needs. They don't need all of those things, but those are all places where, if you were being flexible, and Jerry DePoto is, there are places you could add and make changes. I think that's really more what I'm saying. They don't need to go get a first baseman. I'm not saying that. But if you found, like, if the right player available played first base, could you find a, yeah, you could probably find a way to make that work.
Yeah.
If the right player available could run around and play some center field for you, sure. Another name to watch, I think, is Travis Jankowski's outfielder in San Diego. Been in the league
Sebastian's
now for a couple of years.
Right?
He is not
related.
More of a defensive outfielder who gets on base a little bit, 340 clip. I mean, he might be the kind of player that you're looking at who could come in and make a difference in the outfield and just be a better hitter, unfortunately, than Guillermo Heredia.
Good odds. I'm going to be at the White Sox game tonight with some of my family members.
Okay.
The gut feeling, or the feeling in my stomach tonight as that game starts tonight, is it going to be more reflective of the final 2.5 weeks of the first half, or of that stretch of baseball where you came in here and you're like, yep, Mariners win, shocker. Ah, yep, Mariners win. Oh, Mariners find a way to win.
What do you think?
8 games in a row, 5 games in a row, 5 games in a row. What is my gut feeling going to be as I sit in that seat tonight and take this game in? I'm going to demand that my gut goes back to May and June and not July. That I'm going to have that same sense of belief that they're going to just find a way to get it done, no matter what it's going to look like. And Wade LeBlanc's going to get the call, because, of course, Wade LeBlanc's going to get the call to begin the second half of the season, and Felix is going to follow him the next night. And I'm going to choose to have that belief. There was a whole lot more there in May and June than it was in a difficult July.
My confidence will be there. It will be back, but it will be shaky.
And I'm going to turn my text off from you. I'm not going to look at my phone tonight.
I'll be very, very clear. I think they're going to come back and be good. And the moment something goes wrong, I will be in full-fledged panic mode. So I'm just going to tell you now. I'd rather just admit it and be very clear at the beginning.
Abreu hits a 3-run bomb in the top of the first.
I'll throw something through the television, right, man. Like, I will be texting you and bothering you and telling you that what happened in Colorado is what's going to happen the rest of the year. Just get used to it now. All right, it's Brock and Salk. Let's see. I want to remind you guys that you can listen to the show on the 710 Sports app. That is driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealers. We are dropping a bomb on everybody here at 9 o'clock. You should start preparing yourself for it. I don't know if you can handle it. Before we do it, we'll figure out what's in the news. Next, I'm Brock and Salk.
Good news. Yeah! Bad news. No news. Now, here's Brock and Salk.
I can't believe what you're doing to this poor guy. It's just wrong.
What?
It's wrong. It's not fair.
Mike, without football, America's lost.
Well, clearly.
And this show is football, mind you.
So, Haley's
15 and a half.
And her...
Maybe 16, her boyfriend.
Boyfriend.
Yeah.
Camden is here.
That's right.
Visiting from
Wenatchee.
Wenatchee.
Camden Yards is what Mike Ewart calls him, so he can remember his name.
He's here visiting from Wenatchee.
Poor Mike, CTE is so bad. Yeah.
And you had to bring him to work with you today because Macy's birthday. Happy birthday, Macy.
Happy birthday.
And he can't be around for that. It's an all girls thing.
Yes.
So he is here with you.
Yep.
You got him up at what time this morning?
5 a.m.
And he went to bed at what time last night?
2 a.m.
2:30.
Yeah.
So you gave this poor kid 2.5 hours sleep.
That's his choice. I said to these teenagers,
why don't you just sleep through the entire party?
I encouraged him and I said, hey, you need to get to bed. I'd get to bed by 11.
But he was helping your wife get ready for the party.
Sure was.
He was being a good, solid citizen, and you punished him for it by making him get up 2.5 hours later.
Yep.
Camden, go take a nap. You don't have to sit here and listen to us drone on. Go take a nap. It's ridiculous. What's in the news?
Good news, bad news, no news.
The Warriors and Kings will play an NBA preseason game at the Key on October 5th.
And I know so many are so mad at that.
Are they?
I hate the NBA. I hate David Stern. I hate that they come back. I don't want any part of it in Seattle.
I haven't really heard people that mad.
Oh, there's a lot of people mad.
Really?
Not me. Good news. Love Kevin Durant. He loves Seattle. This is why this game is happening, in my opinion. He wanted to come back. It's also further good news because that building is going to be largely imploded, I believe, after that game to build that hockey arena, which will eventually actually bring the NBA back. Good news to me.
Yeah, let's just keep remembering that. I think it is good news. I think it's going to be fun. I've got this on my calendar, something that I want to try to get to. And this will be the last thing done in that building. So for anybody who's worried, like, oh, this is going to be the future of what the NBA will look like, no, this is going to be the end of this building and sort of the end of an era before you open up a new building here in a couple of years. I think it's good news. I like it.
Good news, bad news, no news.
Hold on one second.
On Danny DeVinmore yesterday. He's looking for both pitchers and position players as the deadline approaches.
One thing I thought was interesting yesterday is listening to Danny and Jim talk about it. And talking about how they thought that there would be tears shed there. You think there will be?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. There'll be people that see it in, like, this decade of darkness we've had. Of man, with it here, I'm actually remembering how great it was. And how many memories that were actually made in this building. And the Gary Paytons and the Sean Kemps. 1,000% there will be people misty-eyed.
Really?
Yeah, I would agree with that. Yep. What'd you say, Howdy?
Jerry DePoto wants to add players.
Yeah, he should. Good news. What else is he going to do? It's almost no news. Like, of course he's going to add players at the deadline. He's Jerry DePoto, and his team's in contention.
I do, listening to a bunch of that sound, and we played some of it there, and Lydia played a bunch of it. It is such a stark contrast in his predecessor. And Jack just played Zorenzik, his card, so close to his vest. He just never gave you anything. He just wouldn't answer any real question. And Jerry's like, yeah, here's the market. I mean, he was the best player. There's a big gap between the next one. There's kind of a cliff there. And there are going to be a lot of bullpen guys. And that Brad Hand move was a big, big one. And everyone saw it coming. And actually, Adam Simber wasn't just a throw-in. That the Indians target him. He's not afraid to share some of that info. I love that about Jerry. And I think it's why he's a deal maker and why we'll see deals get done in the next 11 days.
Good news, bad news, no news.
American Kevin Kisner leads the British Open at 8-under. Is there a nickname for him? Is it Kiz? Like, does he have a nickname? Like a cool nickname?
I've always called him a Kiz.
That's a little dude right there. He and Zach are encouragement for all of you out there, Howdy. It doesn't matter what the background is, where you come from, what your size, what your shape is. Don't ever put any limits in professional sports, or sports for that matter, on any of your kiddos, because you never know what they're going to do and accomplish. Good news. Good news. I like Lil Kisner.
He's 5'10". I mean, he's not that little.
He's tiny. He's 5'9", 1.58.
He's 5'10".
Russell Wilson.
He is a normal-sized human.
He's 5'9", 1.58.
He is 5'10", and when you see him out there, he does not look that small.
I'm going to guess
you've said this
smoker.
Over and over again today, and yes. I don't know that I agree with you at all.
He is teeny.
No, he's not. He's 5'10".
Titus's shoulders are broader than his.
He's 5'10". He's a professional golfer. I don't understand where you get these things.
5'10 comes in a lot of different packages.
Zach Johnson's 5'11". He's 5'10".
There's no chance in the world those guys are 5'10 and 5'11".
No? You think they're lying?
Yes. I think they are exaggerated
in
their
spikes. Can't we get them measured at the combine? Isn't there a golfer's combine to figure this stuff out? No?
What do they say, that little lefty golfer from Canada that won the Masters a few years ago?
Mike Weir?
Punch in his size. If it says anything above 5'9", I call shenanigans.
You don't know what you're talking
5'9".
About.
5'9".
Yeah. So there you go. It's accurate.
Shenanigans. No shenanigans.
Shenanigans. Totally.
You said above 5'9". Now you're changing your answer.
Probably 5'4.5".
All right. Good news. I like Kevin Kisner. Kind of fun guy to watch. Jordan having a good day. He's two under on the day. If he can get to four under before it's all said and done today, I'd say he's right there.
Would a Tiger end up even?
Even.
These would be the best ratings of the majors in some time. And the Masters was really good because Tiger was relevant. But to have Phil make the cut, to have Tiger make the cut, to have Spieth make the cut, to have all those guys relevant, these are going to be some monster ratings for the Open.
Yeah, Rory, by the way, very relevant.
Oh, there
four
you go.
Under. Rory's
finally,
just a couple of shots
finally
back.
Finally a weekend tourney with all those guys.
Ricky Fowler is four under and hasn't teed off yet today. So, yeah, some of the bigger names in golf. John Rahm, I don't know if you consider him a big name yet, but some of those bigger names are all up
and
there.
And your favorite, Koepka.
I'm not a big
Who was
Koepka
wearing
guy.
A muumuu.
Yeah, what was he wearing?
I don't know.
Koepka's one under.
Good news, bad news, no news.
North Carolina head coach Larry Fedora says the loss of football will lead to the downfall of American society.
I'll never root for North Carolina again.
Once we get to clothing and body image, Lydia is so good. She's like,
Lydia, you didn't see him wearing a muumuu?
Like Brooks Koepka's outfit. All right, next.
He's wearing some sort of a thing that like covers his rear end. He looks it's like he's wearing a cape.
He's cold and it's raining.
Yeah, but so is Zach Johnson, but he's not wearing a muumuu.
Larry Fedora says that...
Yeah, we covered this. He's ridiculous. This is bad news in every way. You got to play the sound, though.
There will be decline of our country, there's no doubt.
What are you talking about?
Every story in this is like, yeah, Jerry DeBoto's going to make moves.
There will be decline of our country, there's no doubt. Yeah, there's no doubt in my mind. I think because the lessons that you learn in the game of football relay to everything that's going to happen in the rest of your life.
This guy's a clown. What a clown. This is good news. I'm glad that these things happen. They give us
something
to talk
about. Don't
you want
that caricature? Don't you want that? Don't you want that in football? You need that. You need me on the
Probably
wall.
Probably not if that's like your parent, your kid is going to that
so
school,
I don't know what he looks. I've never seen Larry Fedora before. I know you described him to me earlier. But rather than listen to
Pictures
your description.
Alone.
No, stop. I don't want your silly description. I'm imagining John Voight in what's the?
Friday Night.
No, the other
Varsity
one.
Blues.
Varsity Blues. I am picturing.
I don't want your life.
Yes, I am picturing John Voight, the evil, nasty John Voight. That's all I'm imagining when I think of Larry Fedora, because that's the only kind of person who could have that kind of opinion.
He actually think Bernard Longer.
What?
Yes, he's actually ripped,
like
kind of juice.
No,
yes.
I'm going with John Voight.
Yeah, okay,
John Voight in Varsity Blues. That's what I'm imagining.
Coach
for Larry
Bud
Fedora.
Kilmer.
Is that his name?
Yeah, Coach Kilmer.
I haven't seen Varsity Blues in a while. I might have to do a little screening of Varsity Blues. See what's going on with Tweeter.
Give it a 10.
See what Tweeter's up to and the rest of those guys. All right, we got a weird surprise for you. You're going to want to hear it next. I'm Brock and Salk.